A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. We talked yesterday about media handling in static site deployments, which I think is a very relevant topic as more people are getting into stuff like Astro and all the rest of those Jamstack frameworks. I'm not sure, do they even call themselves Jamstack anymore? Now that Astro has joined Cloudflare and just become part of the mainstream internet. But that was, you know, traditionally those frameworks, those static site deployment projects. And we talked about how you can handle media assets if you are using them to deploy a blog or, you know, I mean, basically anything, I'd say, because who realistically is going to create a website without literally any icons or pictures in them? But the volume of images might differ dramatically from something like a blog versus a corporate site. We talked about where those pivot points lie between, let's say, when you can keep it really simple and the simplest thing you can do is just deploy your media files in the repo versus when to use blob storage and finally CDN at the top end. I said that we should talk about video separately because whenever I poke around the Vercel marketplace, which they have a great collection of integrations, for video specifically, there are different CDN frameworks that can be used. And this is an interesting one because on the one hand, I guess it doesn't sound very tempting for no reason to say, okay, I'm going to put my images in Cloudflare CDN or blob storage, but specifically video I'm going to put somewhere else. And I think the logic is actually more that they give you really nice ways to handle the streaming. So not only do you host the video assets in their bucket, but they handle all the streaming complexity. And that's what I'd love to get into today, because it's one of those things, I guess, that on the surface, it kind of sounds like, well, what's the difference between an image and a video, right? It's both we're streaming content from somewhere to the web user, or audio for that matter. You know, how much of a difference do all these things make? And I think for audio, in terms of getting a nice front-end experience for the user, it's probably less of a technical challenge. But video, when you think about it, and you think about how platforms like YouTube handled streaming, there's a lot of things that are going on under the hood in moving the video data from the server to the user, including things that can make the whole experience a lot less frictive, such as automatically choosing the right or the optimal stream bitrate resolution for the user based upon their connection speed. And if you can, of course, just serve it directly from blob storage, a video, an MP4 file or whatever your video is going up in. But the value add for these video native or video specific services is exactly that. They're built to do video excellently such that the type of experience the user gets watching video on your site is going to feel like YouTube without being YouTube. And this is something I've done countless times, I'm sure everyone who builds websites has, using YouTube as kind of a, let's say, storage medium for video, where you embed something that might be unlisted. And we all kind of know that's not really what YouTube is there for. And you pointed out that it has some, not only privacy implications, you're forcing the visitors to watch videos on YouTube, whether they like it or not. You have related videos that comes up at the end, and it just doesn't look professional if you're trying to create your own brand and you have the YouTube thumbnail to play. You can try hide those things, but it's amateur. It's not the way to go. So if you want to deliver a video with an infrastructure that doesn't feel like this video is coming from some server under your bed, this is actually, there's some legitimate infrastructure backing this, and give viewers the type of streaming experience they're accustomed to, this is where they shine. Let's talk about exactly what those platforms are for video serving into serverless deployments. And when to sort of circle back to where we were before, that kind of pivot point lies between static is good or a blob storage is good enough versus it's actually worthwhile to look at one of these. And what are we talking about in terms of approximate costs and who are the main providers? Herman and Korn, over to you.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about video. Specifically, when you're building a static site or serverless deployment, where do your video files live? And at what point does it make sense to move from simple blob storage to a dedicated video platform? The core tension he's pointing at is interesting. On the surface, a video file is just another asset, like an image, but the streaming experience people expect now. Adaptive bitrate, instant scrubbing, no buffering. That's a whole different beast.
It really is. And the prompt nails something important right at the top, the Jamstack identity question. Astro joining Cloudflare, the frameworks becoming just part of the mainstream web infrastructure, the label barely matters anymore. What matters is the actual deployment pattern. You're pushing static assets to a CDEN, maybe with some edge functions, and video breaks that model in ways that images simply don't.
I mean, at the file level, it's still bits moving from a server to a browser.
At the file level, sure. But think about what a single video actually is once you're serving it properly. It's not one file. It's a manifest pointing to maybe 6 or 8 different renditions at different bit rates and resolutions. 360p, 720p, 1080p, 1080p, maybe 4K. Each split into tiny segments, typically 2 to 10 seconds long. The player is constantly making decisions. What's the viewer's bandwidth right now? Did it just drop? Switch to a lower bitrate for the next segment. Did they click to scrub ahead to minute 14? Jump to the right segment instantly without downloading everything in between.
It's not serve this file. It's more like conduct this orchestra in real time.
That's exactly the metaphor. And when you just drop an MP4 into blob storage and point a video tag at it, you lose all of that. The browser downloads the file sequentially from the start. If the viewer has a slow connection, they buffer. If they want to skip ahead, the browser has to request a byte range and hope the server supports it properly. There's no dynamic quality switching. It's the video equivalent of serving a single full-resolution PNG for every visitor regardless of their screen size. If their connection dips, it drops to a lower quality seamlessly. If it improves, it ramps back up. The viewer never sees a buffering spinner.
Which is what YouTube does.
Nobody notices if an image takes an extra 300 milliseconds. A video stuttering or buffering for 3 seconds? That's an abandoned view. It plays one file, start to finish, at one quality. If you want ABR, you need a player that supports HLS or MPEG-DASH, which are the two main streaming protocols. Let's name the big three, MUX, Cloudflare Stream, and BunnyStream. Those are the ones that come up in every serious discussion about video for modern web deployments.
The first pivot point is, do you need adaptive bitrate streaming? If your video is a 30-second hero loop on a landing page, maybe not. One well-compressed MP4 might be fine. If it's a 2-hour lecture, absolutely yes.
The differences are in pricing, features, and how they fit into your existing stack. You could set up your own pipeline with FFmpeg and a queue worker, but now you're maintaining infrastructure, dealing with failure states, managing storage for all those renditions. MUX is positioned as the developer-focused video, API. Their whole pitch is, upload a single high-quality source file, and we handle everything downstream.
Like adopting a feral cat.
An animated explainer with flat colors doesn't need the same bitrate at 1080p as a nature documentary with lots of detail.
That's smart. So they're not just transcoding to a fixed set of presets, they're looking at the actual content.
And their pricing reflects that premium positioning. They charge for ingestion, encoding the source, and then for delivery by the minute of video viewed. It's usage-based, which is great if your traffic is unpredictable or low. But it can get expensive fast if you've got a high-volume site. We're talking somewhere in the range of $1 to $2 per 1,000 minutes of delivered video, depending on the plan, plus encoding costs. Streaming delivery is about $1.10 per 1,000 minutes watched. Storage is separate, roughly $1.20 per 1,000 minutes of stored content per month.
If I upload a 10-minute video and 1,000 people watch the whole thing, what am I looking at?
But compared to the engineering time of building and maintaining your own transcoding pipeline and segment delivery, it's a rounding error. If those 1,000 people only watch an average of 2 minutes each, your delivery cost drops to about $2.20. That's the beauty of usage-based pricing. You pay for what your audience actually consumes.
The video quality is good.
Their pricing is more storage forward. You pay per minute of stored video, around $1 per thousand minutes stored per month, and then $1 per thousand minutes delivered, plus a one-time encoding fee. A talking head video with a static background gets a very different encoding profile than an action sequence with lots of motion. They also do just-in-time transcoding, so if nobody ever requests the 4K rendition of your video, they might not even generate it. It's very efficient.
Okay, what about Cloudflare Stream? They're the obvious competitor if you're already in the Cloudflare ecosystem.
They also have some neat features like signed URLs for access control, live streaming support, and the ability to add watermarks or captions programmatically through their API. Streaming is $1 per thousand minutes delivered, so compared to MUX, the streaming cost is similar. MUX is $1.10, Cloudflare is $1, but Cloudflare charges meaningfully more for storage. They provide an embed code with their own player, but you can also use the raw HLS or dash URLs with something like Video.js or Plier if you want more control over the UI.
The math favors Cloudflare if your videos get watched a lot, relative to how much you store, and MUX if you have a large library that doesn't get many views per video.
That's exactly the trade-off. Cloudflare Stream also benefits enormously from being on Cloudflare's network. If you're already using Cloudflare for your DNS and CDN, Stream integrates natively. BunnyStream is the one that often wins on pure price. Net is the CDN company, and their streaming product is built on the same network. Their pricing is extremely aggressive.
Then BunnyStream.
BunnyStream is the dark horse here, and honestly, it's the one that surprises people on price. Net operates their own global CDN with something like 114 points of presence. Their pricing is dramatically lower. Storage is 1 cent per gigabyte per month, not per minute per gigabyte. Delivery is 10 cents per gigabyte for the first 500 terabytes. For video, a gigabyte is roughly an hour of 1080p content, give or take depending on encoding. So you're looking at fractions of a penny per view for typical video lengths.
That's an order of magnitude cheaper.
It's not even the same ballpark. BunnyStream also does adaptive bitrate, also gives you a player, also handles transcoding. The trade-off is that their feature set is narrower. They don't have the deep analytics that MUX offers. Their API is simpler, which is fine for basic use cases, but might be limiting if you need fine-grained control. And their transcoding pipeline, while perfectly competent, doesn't do the per-title optimization that MUX does. You'll get good quality, but MUX will squeeze more quality out of the same bitrate.
Bunny is the glockenspiel of corporate approachability. It does the thing. It's charmingly cheap. Nobody's mad at it.
That's a perfect description. BunnyStream is what you use when you need solid video delivery without any fuss and you don't want to think about the bill. MUX is what you use when video is central to your product and you need analytics, quality optimization, and a rich API surface. Cloudflare Stream is what you use when you're already all in on Cloudflare and want everything under one roof.
Let's talk about the pivot point. When does someone actually need to move from, I'll just serve an MP4 from my static site, to one of these platforms? What's the trigger?
I think there are three triggers. The first is user experience, which we already touched on. If your video is longer than about 30 seconds, and especially if it's longer than a couple of minutes, you want adaptive bitrate. The second is bandwidth cost. If you're hosting video files on your own origin server or in a generic blob store and serving them directly, every view pulls the full file. It becomes not great when the video is longer than about 30 seconds, or when you expect viewers on mobile networks, or when scrubbing matters. If someone is watching a tutorial and they need to jump to the 3-minute mark to find the specific section they need, waiting for the file to buffer to that point is infuriating.
The platform can actually be cheaper than the DI. Why approach once you hit any kind of scale?
Especially when you factor in the time you'd spend building and maintaining your own solution. The third trigger is features. Let's run a concrete scenario. Say you've got a documentation site with 10 tutorial videos, each about 5 minutes long. You're getting maybe 50,000 total views a month across all videos.
The player itself. The HTML5 video element is fine for a demo, but it looks different in every browser. Chrome has one set of controls, Safari has another, Firefox has a third. None of them feel polished.
On MUX, similar ballpark, maybe a bit more with encoding costs. On Cloudflare Stream, similar. Now, the alternative, you put MP4s in R2. Storage is basically free at that scale. Delivery through Cloudflare CDNE, if you're already on Cloudflare, is free or nearly free because video delivery is just bandwidth. You pay nothing extra. But your users get a worse experience. They can't scrub well. Mobile users buffer.
The pivot point, practically speaking, is you're building a site, you need video, and any of the following is true. The video is longer than a minute. You expect more than a few hundred views a month. You want it to not look like a high school computer lab project. Or you value your sanity.
That's the short version. The slightly longer version is that there's a spectrum. At the simplest end, you can put an MP4 in your repo and call it a day. This works for tiny hero videos, animated backgrounds, things that are essentially decorative. That's the framing, and it depends on what the video is doing for your site. If it's decorative, a hero background, blob storage is fine.
There's an intermediate step that I think is worth mentioning, which is you can pre-transcode your video into multiple renditions yourself using FFmpeg, store them in a bucket, and use an open source player like VideoJS or Plia that supports HLS. There's something else the prompt mentioned that I want to dig into. The YouTube is free hosting hack. Daniel called it amateur, and he's right, but I think there's a deeper reason it feels wrong beyond the branding and the related videos.
What are you thinking? But for the audience we're talking about, people deploying static sites, small teams, solo developers, the operational overhead of maintaining that pipeline usually isn't worth the savings. You have to monitor it. You have to deal with storage management. You have to handle CDN configuration. The platforms abstract all of that away.
So you've invited a competitor into your own page.
And there's a privacy dimension too. Embedding YouTube means Google's tracking scripts load on your page. Even with the privacy-enhanced embed, you're sending visitor data to YouTube. If you're building a site where you care about privacy, and many site owners do, especially in Europe with GDPR, that's a real cost. A dedicated video platform like MUX or Bunny doesn't inject third-party tracking into your page. There are audio-specific platforms, like Transistor or Simplecast for podcast hosting, but they're more about RSS feed management, analytics, and distribution to Apple and Spotify than about streaming technology. It's worth naming something that gets overlooked in these discussions. The player itself is a branding surface.
Audio is basically where images were 5 years ago. The infrastructure is mature enough that you don't need a specialized platform unless you're doing something unusual.
It sounds small, but it's the difference between feeling like a product and feeling like someone's weekend project. Each video is roughly 200 megabytes. You get about 5,000 views per month across all videos, with an average watch time of 2 minutes per view.
The little details that signal a professional made this. The custom player UI is one of those signals. The YouTube embed with the red play button and the watch on YouTube link in the corner is the opposite of that.
I'm going to let the Glockenspiel thing slide because I actually want to talk about audio, which the prompt mentioned briefly. Daniel said audio is probably less of a technical challenge, and he's mostly right. Audio files are smaller, the bitrate demands are lower, and the user experience of streaming a single audio file is generally fine. But there's a catch.
There's always a catch.
Podcasts and long-form audio. If you're serving a 2-hour podcast episode as a single MP3 and someone pauses halfway through and comes back later, the browser might not resume correctly. Or if they want to skip to the 45-minute mark, same scrubbing problem as video. The solution is the same, HLS streaming with segments. But the tools for audio HLS are simpler and cheaper. You can generate an HLS audio stream with FMPEG in a few lines and serve it from any CDN. You don't need a specialized service the way you do for video. At 8.5 cents per gig, that's $34.
MUX is cheaper than rolling your own on IWS.
In this scenario, yes. And that's before you factor in the time you spent setting up CloudFront, configuring cores, dealing with cache and validation, and building any kind of player UI. BunnyStream would be even cheaper, roughly $1.50 for the same delivery volume.
That's almost comical. $1.50 versus $34.
500 hours is 30,000 minutes, so $30 a month in storage. Encoding is a one-time fee of about $5 per 1,000 minutes, so about $150 once. Delivery at 200,000 views. Let's say average watch time is 15 minutes per view, so 3 million minutes. At $1 per 1,000 minutes delivered, that's $3,000 a month.
$3,000 a month.
Now compare to BunnyStream, storage for 500 hours of video. Let's say the encoded versions total about 500 gigabytes. At half a cent per gigabyte per month, that's $2.50 a month. Encoding is free. Delivery, 3 million minutes at roughly $1 per 1,000 minutes, is also about $3,000 a month. But Bunny's per minute rate drops at higher volumes. If you're doing millions of minutes, you're probably paying closer to 60 or 70 cents per 1,000. So maybe $2,000 a month.
Because the encoder can just say, this block of pixels is the same as last frame. Don't bother resending it.
Modern video codecs like H.264 and H.265 and AV1 work by encoding the differences between frames, not each frame independently. If there's no motion, there's almost nothing to encode. So a talking head video at 1080p might look perfect at 2 megabits per second, while a soccer match needs 8 megabits per second to avoid turning into a blocky mess. Per title encoding analyzes the actual content of your video and builds a custom encoding ladder that allocates bits where they're needed.
MUX does this automatically.
MUX does it automatically. Cloudflare Stream does something similar, though they're less public about the details. BunnyStream uses a more traditional fixed ladder approach, which is part of why they're cheaper, less computation per video.
If you're doing, say, a course platform where most of your content is talking head lectures, MUX's per title encoding could meaningfully reduce your delivery costs, because each minute watched uses less data.
And it also improves the viewer experience because the quality adapts more intelligently. Nobody's lecture needs to be delivered at 15 megabits per second, but a fixed ladder might serve it at a higher bit rate than necessary simply because that's what the ladder says for 1080p.
Let's talk about the Versal Marketplace angle, because the prompt specifically mentioned that. How do these platforms actually integrate with the deployment workflow?
Vercel's Marketplace is essentially a curated list of integrations that work well with their platform. MUX has a first-class integration. You can add it from the dashboard, it provisions an account, and you get environment variables injected into your project automatically. Cloudflare Stream doesn't have a direct Vercel integration in the same way, but it works perfectly fine. You just use their API. BunnyStream is similar. The integration is mostly about convenience, not about technical compatibility. Any of these platforms work with any hosting provider because they're all API-driven.
The real workflow question is, how do you get your videos into the platform? If you're using a static-side CMS, you're probably uploading content through some kind of admin interface.
Cloudflare Stream is similarly straightforward if you're in the Cloudflare ecosystem. You upload to Stream, get an embed code, paste it. Bunny has a simpler API, but the same basic workflow. The video never touches your own server. Your CMS just stores the MUX asset ID and playback ID. When you render the page, you use those IDs to embed the player. All three provide raw HLS or dash URLs. You can use a vanilla web component or a lightweight player library like Plier. The integration isn't framework specific. The streaming protocol is standard.
For a site built with something like Astro, this is all happening at build time or client side.
Client side for the upload. The embedding is done at build time if you're using a static approach, or at request time if you're using server-side rendering. But the key insight is that the video platform is a completely separate service. That's it. The complexity is all on their side. That's what you're paying for. And it's worth noting that all three have free tiers or generous trial credits. MUX gives you $300 in credits when you sign up.
Which is the entire Jamstack philosophy, even if nobody calls it Jamstack anymore.
The name may have faded, but the architecture won. Separation of concerns between your content layer and your delivery layer, with APIs gluing everything together. Video platforms are a perfect example of why this approach works. It depends on the stack. If I'm already on Cloudflare for everything else, DNS, R2, workers, I'd use Cloudflare Stream just to keep the billing and the dashboard in one place.
I've seen people try to do video in their Git repo. It's not pretty.
None of them is the wrong choice. And then your CI pipeline has to process those files on every build. It's the wrong tool for the job.
To summarize the decision framework, if you're adding video to a site, the default should be a video platform. You contain a tendency to avoid picking favorites.
If you put a gun to my head, Bunny, the pricing is too good to ignore, and for 90% of use cases, the feature set is more than enough. MUX is better if you need per-title encoding and advanced analytics. Cloudflare Stream is better if you're already deep in that ecosystem. But Bunny is the one I'd reach for first.
There's something about the whole category that's worth stepping back and looking at.
I've lived that despair. It's not worth the $12 a month you're saving.
The fact that we're now debating the relative merits of three developer-friendly APIs with free tiers and usage-based pricing, that's a genuine shift in who gets to use video on the web. And you get the YouTube branding, the related videos at the end, the general feeling that you're borrowing someone else's platform.
Now I can use a video API to dynamically generate thumbnails, add watermarks, clip segments, pull analytics into my own dashboard. Video has become a programmable resource, not a file IFTP to a server. A video platform lets you serve video on your own domain, with your own branding, no third-party cookies, no algorithmic recommendations pulling your visitors away to watch compilations of cats falling off tables.
Unless your site is about cats falling off tables, in which case that's actually a feature.
That's what the Jamstack movement was really about. Not just static sites, but composing your infrastructure from specialized services that each do one thing well.
Which brings us back to the beginning. Daniel was asking whether the Jamstack label even means anything anymore. YouTube is optimized for YouTube's goals, which include maximizing watch time across the platform. A platform like MUX is optimized for your goals, which are probably play this specific video smoothly and then let the user get on with their life.
The other thing about YouTube embeds is that you have no control over the encoding. YouTube re-encodes everything to their specifications, and while they're very good at it, you can't tune it for your content. Nobody says, I'm building a Lampstack site anymore. It's just a website. Same thing happened here.
We've named the platforms, we've told pricing, we've talked about when to switch from blob storage. The prompt also asked about approximate costs. Can you give a quick summary for the listener who's trying to budget this?
Rule of thumb, at low volume, say under 1,000 minutes of delivered video per month, you're paying single-digit dollars. At medium volume, 10,000 to 100,000 minutes, you're paying tens to low hundreds of dollars. At high volume, millions of minutes, you're paying thousands. The pricing is linear enough that you can estimate it with a simple formula, figure out your expected minutes delivered, multiply by about a dollar per thousand, and that's your ballpark. Storage is usually negligible by comparison.
The cost model is different.
Live streaming is priced by the hour of input, not by minutes watched. MUX charges around 35 cents per hour of live input for basic live, and more for reduced latency modes. Cloudflare Stream charges about a dollar per hour of live input. The delivery costs are on top of that. It adds up quickly if you're doing frequent live events.
For the use case we're discussing, video on a static site, live is probably not the primary concern.
Most people embedding video on a marketing site or a blog or a course platform are dealing with pre-recorded content. All three are better than YouTube embeds, but they're not zero tracking either. MUX and Bunny both collect analytics by default, video engagement metrics, buffering rates, that kind of thing, but it's all first party to you.
Let's circle back to costs one more time, because I think people get nervous about usage-based pricing. There's a fear that a video going viral could mean a surprise $1,000 bill.
This is a legitimate concern. MUX and Cloudflare both let you set spending limits so you can cap your monthly costs. Bunny is so cheap that a viral video is unlikely to break the bank. 10,000 views of a 5-minute video at 1080p would cost you maybe $1.50 in delivery. But yes, with usage-based pricing, you need to be aware of what you're spending. The flip side is that fixed-price plans usually overcharge you for your actual usage. Most sites serve very little video traffic. If you're paying a flat $50 a month for a video hosting plan and you're serving 100 views, you're overpaying dramatically.
The usage-based model actually benefits small sites.
The median website with embedded video probably serves a few hundred views a month. On MUX, that's literally cents. On a fixed price plan, it's $20 to $50. The fear of a surprise bill is real, but for the vast majority of users, usage-based pricing is a better deal.
You can mitigate the risk with caps and monitoring.
Set a budget alert. Set a hard cap if your platform supports it. Check your dashboard once a month. It's not a set it and forget it situation, but it's also not the financial time bomb that some people imagine.
What about the self-hosting diehards? The people who say, I want to own my infrastructure. I don't want to depend on a third-party service that could change its pricing or shut down.
I have sympathy for that position. Vendor lock-in is real. If you build your entire video workflow around Mux's API, and Mux doubles their prices or gets acquired and shut down, you have a migration problem. The counter-argument is that video is hard to do well. The engineering effort required to match what these platforms offer is substantial. For most projects, the risk of vendor problems is outweighed by the certainty of spending weeks building and maintaining a video pipeline.
The migration path isn't that bad. You have your source files. You upload them to a different platform. You change the embed code. It's not like you're locked into a proprietary database format.
Video files are portable. The platform-specific part is the transcoding and delivery, not the asset itself. You can always take your original MP4 and move it somewhere else. The switching cost is mostly operational, updating your CMS, changing your embed code, re-uploading your library.
For someone who's convinced, what's the actual implementation look like? Say I'm building an Astro site. I want to add a video page. I've chosen Mux. Walk me through it.
You'd install the Mux Node SDK, add your API keys as environment variables, and create an upload endpoint. When a user uploads a video in your CMS, your front end calls that endpoint, gets a signed upload URL, and uploads directly to Mux. Mux returns an asset ID. You store that ID in your content. When you render the page, you use the Mux player component, or just a simple iframe embed, with the playback ID. The player handles everything else, adaptive bitrate, quality switching, keyboard shortcuts, full screen. It's maybe 20 lines of code total.
The same pattern works for Cloudflare Stream or Bunny.
API key, upload, store the ID, embed the player. The differences are in the details. Which player you use, what the API endpoints look like, what features are available. But the architecture is the same across all three.
It's almost like there's an emerging standard for how video should work on the web.
There is, and it's been a long time coming. For years, web video was a mess of Flash players and Silverlight, RealPlayer, and QuickTime plugins. The HTML5 video element standardized the basics, but left the hard problems unsolved. These platforms are filling that gap, and they're doing it in a way that's accessible to individual developers, not just enterprises with video engineering teams.
Which is kind of remarkable when you think about it. A solo developer can now deliver video with the same quality and reliability as Netflix for pennies per view.
We're living in the future, and nobody noticed because it arrived so gradually. The infrastructure that powers Netflix is now available as an API. That's extraordinary.
All right, let's land this. If someone listening is building a site and trying to decide what to do about video, what's your one-sentence heuristic?
If the video matters to your site, use a video platform. It'll be cheaper, faster, and better than anything you build yourself, and the only reason not to is if your video is a 5-second silent loop that's essentially a GIF.
If you're choosing between platforms, Bunny for price, Mux for features, Cloudflare Stream if you're already on Cloudflare.
That's the taxonomy. Pick your priority.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, gold prospectors in the Yukon reported that local honeybees, imported by settlers, performed waggle dances with a distinct regional dialect, rotating their figure eights approximately 12 degrees counterclockwise relative to bees in temperate climates, a behavioral quirk that has never been satisfactorily explained.
I have so many questions, and I'm not sure I want any of them answered.
12 degrees counterclockwise, as one does.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps. We're at myweirdprompts.com for show notes and archives. See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep, The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.